Hey everyone, Cecilia Callis here. I am an AI ethicist and a technology writer and the author and founder of Remaining Human, which is a Substack focused on responsible AI and human-centered AI, and to exploring how humans can live in harmony with artificial intelligence as it kind of revolutionizes our world. You can find that Substack at ceciliacallis.substack.com or reach out to me on any social channels, and I would love to continue the conversation there.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another podcast talking about responsible AI this time around. And again, I have the fabulous Cecilia to go over it. Thank you very much for being on this show again and obviously covering the topics of AI. And obviously, we're going to be talking about responsible AI this time around. I guess the first question, first of all, how are you doing before I go
Hi.
into anything else?
Yes, I'm doing wonderfully. Thank you so much for having me on for round two. I love having these conversations with you. So yeah, I think last time we talked about more of a broader stroke covering all things AI, and this time we're going to get a little bit more focused and niche into what does it mean to do AI responsibly.
Cool. Now, when you're talking about AI being doing it responsibly, what does it actually mean? What is responsible AI?
Yeah, so when I first started out in this space, I used to use the terms AI safety, AI ethics, really interchangeably, and not really truly understanding the definition of each of these, and not truly understanding, and you know, until I really delved deep into the space, that AI safety is quite different from AI ethics. And in the process of learning and taking loads of courses and going to loads of events, I've come to understand that responsible AI in this moment in time is really the best umbrella term for a lot of different concepts and buckets that fall underneath responsible AI. And so some of those buckets include things like explainability. So how transparent is it to understand how an AI system works? Transparency. So how transparent are some of these companies being in their creation of AI? Things like fairness and bias and data governance and AI safety. All of these fit into this term called responsible AI. And I think when we think about responsibility, the famous quote that comes to my mind around, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And AI is such a powerful tool. And, you know, so with this notion is really around that with this powerful tool and intelligence that we're creating, we need to, you know, proactively devise guidelines, implement robust testing, and advocate for policies that prioritize the ethical considerations while respecting human rights and equity. So these are really some of the topics that I think of when I think of responsible AI. And, you know, I think many people and companies want to do AI responsibly, but they don't really know where to start. And so that's kind of what we're here to talk about today.
Cool. Now, you were talking about buckets within responsible AI, and you mentioned a few there: transparency, fairness, and bias. Do you mind explaining each of those buckets just that little bit more, and what that covers?
Yes, absolutely. So I just want to preface this by saying this framework was taught to me by a professor out of Stanford's HAI, which stands for Human-Centered AI Institute. So Stanford has one of the leading human-centered AI institutes. They do loads of research and courses and are really kind of expert thought leaders in this space. So their teaching of responsible AI is, I think, a good one to follow. And their key buckets include explainability, transparency, fairness and bias, data governance and privacy, security and safety. And then I would add one more into that, which is AI ethics, which is kind of a different bucket. So those are kind of the different areas that when I think of responsible AI, that's how I'm trying to you know, teach and understand this area. And I can go a little bit deeper into each of those if that would be helpful.
Yeah, if you don't mind, because I think that's something that our listeners, you know, they hear these keywords, but they probably don't fully understand what they mean. So if you don't mind going over that, that would be fantastic.
Definitely. So let's start with explainability. So explainability refers to the capacity to actually understand and articulate how an AI comes to a decision. And this is actually really tricky. And I guess it's like you can kind of refer or think about when a human makes a decision or when a human takes an action. It's not a super straightforward, it's not always straightforward why we did something, right? And AI is kind of turning out to be the same way. So neural networks are often referred to as like a black box. They call it the black box problem. It being that, you know, when you ask ChatGPT to answer a question, you're not going to get the same answer every time. And it's really not clear or easy to really clearly understand and explain why an AI comes to a certain decision or comes to a certain answer. And this becomes really important, you know, when we think about things like hiring teams are using AI to now make hiring decisions and to choose who gets an interview. There was a recent example actually in Spain that I saw a New York Times article about recently, which was that police are being trained to use an algorithm to assess whether or not a victim of domestic abuse is likely to be attacked again. And yeah. And it's quite scary to think of like handing that kind of decision over to AI. And this article, you know, highlighted how it wrongly predicted that a woman would be safe, a certain woman in Spain would be safe. And 7 weeks later, very tragically, her husband killed her. And, you know, these are life and death consequences that really highlight that if we're going to, you know, trust models to make decisions of this magnitude, we need to make sure it's hyper clear how and why they came to these decisions. And I think, you know, I feel very strongly that then humans need to be able to back up those decisions with their own reasoning and their own research before we definitively hand a decision over to an AI. But that's kind of a different topic in and of itself. But hopefully that kind of underpins the necessity of why we need explainability in AI models.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, especially with what you just mentioned, I mean, wow, that's quite shocking actually that they've gone down that route. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I know, and then kind of under like a similar vein that we have transparency. So transparency refers to requiring AI companies to have a certain level of transparency around where they've gotten their data that they've used to train AI models, how they're monitoring AI models, how they're teaching them, how they're deploying the systems, and then what safety frameworks frameworks are in place to ensure that these models continue to act in a way that is safe. So a great resource for this is what's called the Foundation Model Transparency Index. And this is something that's come out of Stanford's HAI. And we can use this to assess, you know, how transparent are developers and how they're building AI, you know, where are they getting their data? I think it's a really great resource for consumers to use when they're making decisions around, you know, which service do I want to use? Do I want to use Anthropic's Claude? Do I want to use ChatGPT? You know, really gives a little bit more power and knowledge to the end consumer to make sure you're choosing the model that, you know, is aligned for you. And I think one more thing I'll say in transparency is there's obviously a balance to strike here. There's proprietary information that AI companies can't share publicly. There's geopolitical concerns as well. There's things we, you know, want to keep closed. However, I do think there's a level of transparency that should be required of AI companies because these are products that are, you know, have the power to impact society. And when we have more transparency, the public and those end consumers have more control. So without transparency, you know, we just don't have insight into if the products we're using were created ethically. And so I think that's a shift that needs to happen in order to create legislation and regulation that is right for the industry.
Okay. And then when we're talking about transparency, does this also cover, you know, where they're scraping their information from? Because there's been a lot of articles that I've been reading recently where NVIDIA was one that I read a couple of days ago where, you know, they've been questioned about scraping loads of stuff from YouTube and all of that. Is that what you also would include within that bucket as well?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for that call out. Yes, data sources, 100%. And this is something that AI companies are kind of notoriously cagey about. They're not super transparent about the fact that, I think it's a common phrase, like ChatGPT ate the internet. Like OpenAI used a lot of copyrighted information to train its models, which now we're seeing lawsuits left, right, and center disputing this, and new laws are being written as a result of some of these actions. So yes, I think when we think about training AI models, it's the right and ethical thing to do to think about where you're getting that data and if that data is copyrighted, and then if it is or if it isn't, like how we think about compensation for the human artists and the human creators and the human writers and human video makers, to your point around NVIDIA using many, many YouTube videos to train their models. So it's a big question and something that is kind of currently being figured out in the legal system, but we have a long way to go.
Yeah, certainly. It does sound like that we are a long way to go from there as well, from everything that I've been reading. And then there's other buckets that you mentioned as well. So
Yeah. So fairness and bias. So I think bias is one that is talked about pretty regularly. This refers to algorithms, like really focusing on creating algorithms that avoid bias and discrimination and consider the diverse needs of different stakeholders. So what does this mean? If we think about the fact that an AI model is trained on vast amounts of data, there's kind of the need to think, okay, is there bias in that data? Or what data is being put into this model? Because the model will then reflect the data, which reflects kind of our society. I've heard it said, the AI we create is a mirror for who we are as humanity at this moment in time. And I think that's really powerful because it shines a light onto where we have bias and discrimination in our own society. But it's definitely not something that we should be preserving in this technology, right? So an example of this, let's use the example of healthcare. So if a healthcare AI platform is trained on biased data, it might recommend treatments for one segment of the population that's not right for another segment of the population. So, another example that comes up that's quite easy to conceptualize is historically, many men have been doctors and many women have been nurses. And in earlier LLMs, if you asked an LLM to come back with a qualifier for the word doctor, it would come back with man. And come back with a word for the word nurse, it comes back with woman, right? And obviously that's hugely biased and hugely discriminatory, and something that, as we think about being forward thinking in our society, like how are we going to really create AI that shifts and adapts with society and doesn't preserve and cement some of these biases that, you know, we don't want to continue. And I will say these like companies are working on this, which I think is amazing. Like they're really putting resources and effort behind it. Google, for example, is really trying to make sure their models are not biased to the point where they're now under a lot of scrutiny even further because there was an example of Google Gemini generating when prompted with the prompt to create pictures of a Nazi was creating pictures that were reflective of Black and Asian Nazis. So obviously that's hugely incorrect and not being faithful to historical representation, right? It's not representative of truth or reality, and we're creating a revision of history in this instance. So it's really like key to ask, you know, who's opinions do the LLM align with? Like, what version of history are we aligning the LLM with? How do we make sure it's factual and correct without being biased? They're not easy questions to answer, and there's a lot of amazing, smart individuals working on these questions, but it's definitely something I think we need to get right and not pass over just to, you know, ship a product more quickly.
Yeah, totally. And when you're talking about bias, and I'm going to talk about the recent riots that we've had in the UK recently. And I know we've got, you know, we had, sorry to name drop, but we had Elon Musk having his bias all over X, his platform. And then obviously he's making his own AI model. So as you're talking about bias now, my head's kind of thinking, you know, is their AI model going to be more biased towards one angle versus another? I mean, that is something definitely that needs to be focused more into for sure. And something I didn't really appreciate until after this conversation right now. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And there's actually been some studies done into the political leanings of LLM. So there was an article recently that the headline was something about ChatGPT being woke because it politically was leaning more on the left side, on the left. So there's a lot of questions because it's not easy to get it perfectly balanced. You'd have to make sure that the data is like perfectly balanced between all these different opinions. But I will say, like, if we were to get it right, I think there's so much value in that because you would be creating an entity that is completely like politically unbiased. And I was, I led a AI salon recently where there was a discussion around elections and how AI can impact elections and governments. And we were talking about how having an unbiased like AI to advise a voter at the ballot box, right, to that they could ask questions and have just a completely unbiased opinion into, okay, this is the platform of candidate A, this is the platform of candidate B, this is what it means for you. So there's a lot of amazing potential there, right, if we were to create something that was completely unbiased to actually really help with correct voter information and support voters in making a balanced decision. We just have to, you know, attempt to get that right, because the flip side of that is, yeah, creating AI that is leans one way or the other. And I think that will happen too. There will be, and the flip side of that is that there will be companies, individuals who create, you know, for example, a far right LLM, which is obviously quite dangerous. So there's a lot of potential for good, a lot of potential for harm, which is kind of what I do as an AI ethicist, is try to figure out how we maximize the good and eliminate some of the bad.
Cool. Okay. No, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. And then what are the other buckets left to obviously discuss, to talk about? Yep.
So we have three more. So data governance and privacy. So data governance pertains to like creating standards and policies to ensure data is high quality and that the data is used ethically. Privacy kind of speaks to, again, some of the things we were talking about around data sources. So it's the right to confidentiality of personal data, the right to consent for your data or your work being used in an AI system. So, for example, I'm a Substack writer, and Substack does have a choice to consent to allow companies to use your writing to train AI models. I have it turned off, but some people might want to have it turned on. But yeah, just the idea here of really giving people, the public, creators, the power to their own privacy, right? I think it's super important. An example of this is if you go to ChatGPT or other LLMs, there's an example of if you put in a prompt for create an image of toys that are alive and playing with a kid, it comes back with toys who look almost identical to the toys in Toy Story. So it's like, clearly they've been trained on data that they definitely didn't have consent for. You know, there's not really any argument on there. And then next is security and safety. So this is one I spend a lot of time thinking about. I'm in a course on AI safety right now. And this is where some of the big existential risk questions sit, being how do we create AI that does not lead to the demise of humanity? How do we create AI that is beneficial, that is safe to use, that is fully within our control? Loss of control of AI is something we talk a lot about in my class. Some of the risks that would fit under AI safety are, you know, malicious use. How do we protect people from, or how do we make sure that bad actors don't use AI for nefarious uses, like creating bioweapons? There's the AI race, so both a corporate race, so corporations racing against each other without prioritizing safety, and then the military arms race. There's already massive resources that have been put against creating lethal autonomous weapons. I think that's a huge risk, and part of AI safety is how do we make sure we're not accidentally starting world wars with AIs making decisions without human intervention. There's organizational risk, which is this need for safety culture within AI companies. And there's also this idea of rogue AIs. So this is really like the loss of control of AIs. And that happens when the goals of AI drift into kind of their own goals versus the goals humans have for them. If they become power seeking, if they engage in deception, these are some of the concepts we talk about when we talk about AI safety.
Wow. And yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, AI safety is important because if it's done wrong, if it goes down the wrong route or used in the wrong way, there is going to be a huge impact for sure. And obviously you've covered the different areas that it does cover. And I mean, for me, when you're talking about it being used in the military or used in that sense, funny enough, I'm thinking about Tom Cruise's last Mission Impossible movie, because that is all about him against an AI that is a threat. Which to me, you know, as you're talking, and you know, sometimes I kind of sit back and think, you know, if we don't have control of it, if we don't have these mechanisms that you are talking about, you know, what kind of risks are there? So, you know, thank you for deep diving that into a lot more. That really helps.
Yeah, of course. And I think we could probably do a whole episode just on safety, to be honest, because I'm learning a lot about AI safety, like a lot on the technical side, on risk analysis, and just what it takes to actually build safe mechanisms into these systems. So there's a lot there. And then lastly, this is one that was not necessarily included into this in this responsible AI umbrella when it was taught to me, but I would definitely include AI ethics under the responsible AI umbrella. And AI ethics definitely encapsulates a lot of the above as well. It speaks to issues around bias and privacy. But for me, AI ethics is kind of this question, right? It's how are we doing, is what we're doing and creating ethical? Which groups are impacted? How do we consider the needs of those groups? What are the trade-offs that need to be made in order to reach this goal of benefiting society as a whole, which is what OpenAI is striving for, and a lot of AI companies say they're striving for. And there will be trade-offs, you know, when we think about like job displacement and layoffs for the sake of profit, like there's a lot of misaligned corporate incentives. Values is a big bucket under this as well. Like, how do we build AI that is reflective of human values, and which values do we want to instill in it? And I think one example I'll give of kind of one of these complicated trade-off questions is I was speaking with the founder of a healthcare AI startup last week, and we were talking about kind of some of these big questions around job displacement, things that keep us up at night. And he brought up an example of, you know, there is a lot of people working in the healthcare industry, and it's often described as, and this is in the US, and it's described as kind of this bloat in the healthcare industry that it is one of the factors that makes healthcare so expensive for patients in the US. And AI could potentially, by way of automating some of those jobs, make treatment for patients a lot less expensive. It could make it a lot less pricey, more affordable, more accessible, especially to marginalized groups. However, that obviously comes at the cost of automating thousands of people out of their jobs. And so it's this really complicated trade-off that I think we as humans need to ask, you know, where are our priorities? How are we going to support every individual as best we can? What are some of the ways we can do that, programs we can create? And yeah, not easy questions to answer, but they definitely need to be thought through.
Yeah, no, of course, of course. Now, obviously, you talk about, you know, models and that are out there. From your experience, is there one model right now that tends to be leaning more towards going towards the whole responsible AI element versus another? I mean, could you give examples of that, of what your findings are as of late?
Yeah, that is a great question. And it's one I think everyone should make for themselves, in the sense of, I think because ChatGPT was first to market, there's this innate use of ChatGPT amongst people who use a large language model regularly, simply because it was the first one to market. It's the most widely known in terms of brand recognition or name recognition. But I do think it's really important for users to now be able to take a step back, do some research, and understand which platform is most aligned to their values, right? And a great resource for that is something called the Helm Leaderboard. And that's, again, a Stanford HAI Institute product or research or resource. And that is, they call it a reproducible and transparent framework for evaluating foundation models. And so what they're trying to do is benchmark these models in a way that provides deeper insights and clarity for people using them, because something like this hasn't existed before, obviously, because the technology is evolving so quickly. But yeah, I really recommend people to go check out that leaderboard and do some research into which systems align with their values. I mean, I could also plug my personal recommendation, and that is Anthropic's Claude 3.5 Sonnet. I think Anthropic is the AI company that is striving to create AI in a way that's truly helpful and harmless for society. And, I mean, no AI will ever be harmless, but they've put a lot of emphasis into safety and ethics, and they're not perfect at all, but they're definitely trying. And I only use Claude now, so but again, I really emphasize the need for people to do their own research and, yeah, just make informed decisions, right? Like, I think so often we just use what's put in front of us, but as the consumers, it's really up to us to decide what we want to allow into our daily lives and how we want to work and live alongside AI.
Right. So one of the things that comes to me, which I'm quite passionate about, is how can we be more mindful about our environment overall? So my question to you here is, with responsible AI, can that tie in with being responsible when it comes to the whole environmental piece?
Yes, I am so happy you asked this question, because it's something I feel so passionately about. And I think it's something that is not talked about enough. I think it's getting a little bit more airtime recently, but and that is the climate footprint of AI. And there's numbers that are quite shocking, honestly. There's the fact that Microsoft's carbon emissions have risen 30% since 2020. Google's have risen 48% since 2019. And this is largely due to the data center expansion that both companies have been participating in to support AI development. And that's really problematic, because, you know, most companies, I think especially those with big corporate sustainability teams like Microsoft and Google, have been striving to figure out ways to lessen their carbon footprint. So to understand that actually that's expanding, and that corporations aren't necessarily putting the same dedication into sustainability that I think a lot of consumers and people like you and I are, like my parents are buying an electric car because they are like, we really want to do our part. So then to find out that the corporations aren't doing their part, but you know, that some of these trends are moving in an unfavorable direction is concerning. And I think a lot of the promise of AI is that it's going to better our world and make things so much better. But I think the question is, you know, what kind of world are we going to be in if we keep using up so many natural resources? And, you know, that's not to say there's not a lot of effort and projects and resources going into figuring out ways of doing AI more sustainably. And I think it's really important to note that researchers are really making great and significant strides to make AI more sustainable. So researchers at the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities, have been working on a computational random access memory chip, and that would hypothetically cut AI energy use by at least 1,000 times. So that's, you know, a great initiative that's happening. AI companies are trying to figure out how to make data centers more sustainable through renewable energy, even trying things like putting data centers underwater. So it's not that they're not trying, but I do think until we have figured out more sustainable ways of doing this, it's just really important for consumers to understand the impact. And a really compelling stat that has kind of revolutionized my use of AI and a lot of my friends as well is that generating an image using an AI model like DALL-E 3, for example, consumes as much energy as fully charging your smartphone.
Wow. Okay.
And I think that's quite shocking, and that's easy to like understand, right? Because I, myself included, like it's easy to just use this tool until you get the exact right image that's exactly right for your needs, instead of asking like, oh, what might already exist on the internet that will work like close enough? And so I think hopefully we'll move into a place of like digital recycling becoming a thing, of people saying, hey, instead of using energy to create an image that I don't really need to, or a video I don't really need to, I'm going to figure out a way to actually use things that have already been created. And I think, yeah, again, until we have more sustainable methods, we do need to participate in some of these sustainable actions, because we need to be protecting our planet.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And it is very important that we do have that in mind, because, you know, I was saying to you earlier on before we even kicked this off, it's getting so hot in the UK and nothing that I've experienced. And then we're looking at the news with Greece and what's happening with Greece and the wildfires and stuff. So, yeah, it is a topic. And I think for the listeners, I don't think sometimes they may not tie AI and the environment together. So thank you for covering that. That's really important.
Yeah, and I think one more interesting piece of this I'll share that I had no knowledge of before I was doing research for a piece is that like using a large language model like ChatGPT is way more energy intensive than using a smaller model. And a report by UNESCO wrote, let me just pull out the quote because I thought it was really compelling. So they say, you know, such usage patterns being using ChatGPT for a really simple request, like writing an email or coming up with a list of restaurants to eat at that night. So those usage patterns can be compared to blasting a cannon to swat a mosquito, resulting in unnecessary internet traffic and heightened computing power and energy consumption. So it's kind of this idea that you don't need to use such a powerful system that's going to use a lot more energy, when we could be using smaller models for some of those smaller tasks. An example of that is Microsoft's Phi 3 Mini, which uses much less energy and, according to Microsoft's website, performs better than models twice its size. So again, I think it's just like bringing awareness to this, right? Because again, when ChatGPT came out, I think we all just started using it blindly and still are like just reaching for it without really thinking about the climate footprint. Are there responsible models out there that might better suit my needs and reflect my values? So again, just pushing some of the ownership back onto the users to understand the best models for themselves and for the planet.
I guess we're coming close to time. Is there anything else that you would like the listeners to learn more about responsible AI? Is there anything that you would direct them towards, or any final thoughts?
Yeah, there's so much out there. I think as people use AI, generative AI, and other AI tools more and more, it's so important, again, to just take that step back and think about, you know, what is my intention with using AI? Is the product I'm using, is it a company that's been transparent in how they have built and trained their models? Is it a tool that potentially is going to have a negative impact on the client? It's really just, or on the, not on the client, the climate. It's really just bringing, you know, awareness to some of our decisions. And as for learning more about responsible AI, I write a Substack where I write about human-centered and responsible AI. I try to highlight companies that are doing it well. I highlight some of the issues that I'm seeing in this landscape. So that's a great resource. There's loads of resources out there. I would encourage people to go to events. That's a way I've really learned so much and met really incredible people in this space. So if you're in London, there are some amazing events in London. I'm actually a part of an organization called the AI Salon, and we have a chapter in London called the AI Salon. We have it in San Francisco as well. But no matter where you are in the world, I guarantee there's communities and groups springing up around responsible AI. Another one is called All Tech is Human. That's a global organization. So there's loads of resources out there. It's just kind of like finding the right one that works for you.
Cool. Thank you. And thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate that. And, you know, for the listeners out there, you know, thank you for listening in. And hopefully we can bring more to you when it comes to the AI space. And yeah, thank you once again.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I can't wait to be back. And who knows what we'll talk about next time. But with AI, everything's moving so fast. So we'll always have loads to talk about. Hey, everyone. Cecilia Callis here. I am an AI ethicist and a technology writer and the author and founder of Remaining Human, which is a Substack focused on responsible AI and human-centered AI, and to exploring how humans can live in harmony with artificial intelligence as it kind of revolutionizes our world. You can find that Substack at ceciliacallis.substack.com or reach out to me on any social channels, and I would love to continue the conversation there.